Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Finally today, let's talk about love and relationships, politics and sex, because our next guest is the legendary advice columnist Dan Savage. He's an author, LGBT activist, and co-founder of the It Gets Better Project. And here's a clip from the most recent episode of his podcast where Dan helps a gay male listener confront a friend with benefits with a smell issue.
What are you risking here if you say something and he's offended? You're risking whatever sex you're having with him. But I think you should be the friend in Friend with Benefits. That part comes first. Sometimes friends say to friends, like, dude, you got to know that when you do X, blank happens.
Well, Dan Savage will be performing a live taping of his podcast at the Wilbur Theater tonight, but he joins us now in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
It's so great to have you. And listeners, this is your chance. If you can't make it to the taping tonight, if you have a relationship or love question for Dan Savage, call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. So Dan, for the few people out there who may not know your origin story, I'm always mindful of those folks.
I was bit by a radioactive sex advice spider.
And a star was born. How'd you get into the advice business?
You know, you fall into it. I met somebody at a party who was moving to Seattle to start a newspaper. It was Tim Kak, who co-founded The Onion, which invented writing about baloney in the AP style. That was Tim. And he was telling me about his paper, and I looked at him and said, oh, you should have an advice column because everybody reads those. You see that format, you can't not read it. And he said, excellent advice, write the advice column. And I really wasn't angling for the gig. I'd never written anything for publication before in my life. And I was gay and very gay and still am very gay. And he was starting a straight newspaper. And how was that going to work? A gay guy giving sex advice to straight people in a straight newspaper. That became the joke that sort of got it off the ground in the first year. Because the idea originally was I was going to treat straight people and straight questions with the same contempt and revulsion that heterosexual advice columnists had always treated gay people and gay sex questions with, and then give a little advice. And
you know, you never quite lost that contempt or revulsion.
Well, you know, straight people loved it. It was a new experience for them. They had never been treated this way, and it was sort of comic. And what had been originally thought of as, you know, something I would do for 6 months or a year as a joke and then hightail it back to Europe where I'd been living with my then boyfriend, is now I'm 26 years into writing this sex advice, syndicated sex advice column.
26 years.
Yeah, and it runs in China in one paper, and it runs in Italy. It's crazy.
Do you get questions or letters or pleas for help from your international audience?
Yes, I do. And it's a little crazy. You know, where you are, location matters often, particularly when you're talking about sexual minorities or trans people. And so the advice that you might give to someone who's struggling with coming out in the United States is very different than the advice you would give to somebody who's struggling with coming out in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm reading a letter thinking, oh, this is what I would tell this person. And then I get to the end and they tell me that they're writing from the United Arab Emirates.
Right.
And that's very different at that moment, what you might say to that person.
Yeah, because their safety could be literally on the line.
Right.
Yeah, wow.
And not just the safety of queer people is threatened in those parts of the world. Women are terrorized and threatened in those parts of the world for any expression of sexual agency. Opposite sex couples have been arrested for adultery or public displays of affection. So it's not just queer people that get it in the teeth. I think queer people get it in the teeth more often and worse, but still.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about how you grew up for a second, because you grew up in Chicago in a Catholic family. You were an altar boy as a child, and you describe yourself as a lapsed Catholic. Does anything about your upbringing or your Catholicism shape your world today? Does it creep into?
Oh, absolutely. I call myself now a cultural Catholic. I do identify as Catholic in the same way a lot of my Jewish friends who don't believe in God, aren't awaiting the Messiah, and eat plenty of bacon identify as Jews. It's my cultural heritage and my cultural tradition. You know, a lot of religious conservatives object to my existence and the existence of my column and my advice. But if you dump all of the advice I've ever given into a stock pot and boil it all down to its essence, what you're left with is the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's mm-hmm. just there's a lot more that can be done unto people in my universe than in some other people's worlds.
Yeah. We've got a couple tweets here.
Oh, awesome.
I just want to remind folks that that voice that you hear is that of Dan Savage. He's the Savage Love Advice columnist and host of the Savage Lovecast podcast. He's going to be taping a live episode of the podcast at the Wilbur Theater tonight, and we've got information about that at radioboston.org. But he will answer your questions if you got them today. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK for your chance to talk to Dan Savage. We got a tweet here from Sylvia Guerrera. She says, Dan, you don't know me, but you've helped me so much with coming out to my family. It really means so much to me.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for that.
That's from Sylvia. And we also have another one here from Sunshine Boston. Okay, so it says, please comment on the strategy, that's capitalized, the strategy before sex, let's test together for a variety of STIs, then make an informed decision, question marks. I'm not quite sure what Sunshine Boston's question is, but strategies for dealing with
roll that out,
how to ask for it. Do you do that?
Well, if that's your requirement before you're intimate, you just put that on the table. And if they don't want to test, then you do not have sex with them. That is the price of admission that they have to pay. I like to talk about the price of admission a lot when I talk about relationship issues in Savage Love. That's the price of admission that you're going to charge to sleep with you. That might cost you some experiences, but they wouldn't be experiences that you would want to have if they came bundled with, to you, what might seem like unacceptable risks. Mm-hmm. It's not a perfect strategy. There are sexually transmitted infections that can be passed through skin-to-skin contact. There are some that, particularly in men, can't be tested for very accurately. So there's always risk. There's no such thing as a risk-free sexual encounter. And only when it comes to sex do we talk about risk-free as the standard. There's no such thing as a risk-free chicken salad sandwich. And yet people will go and eat chicken salad sandwiches knowing full well that other people have eaten a chicken salad sandwich, got salmonella, and died. Yeah. And snowboarding and skiing, which are passions of mine, snowboarding, every day somebody dies on a mountain. And people don't say no one should ski. People say, well, do what you can to mitigate those risks. There's inherent built-in risk in this activity. And at a certain point, you have to shoulder those risks. And sex, when we talk about sex, we always talk about risk as if there's any risk at all, you should not be doing this. And that's just evidence of a sex-negative culture's double standards when it comes to sex.
Do you think that we've gotten better about talking about sex in the quarter century that you've been doing this?
I hope so. I think so, yes. And I would credit it really to two things, the LGBT civil rights movement and the HIV/AIDS epidemic, which moved in concert to a great degree after the 80s. But the LGBT civil rights movement really put it in straight people's heads that when you went to we saw pictures of a gay pride parade. If you looked at more than one, it wasn't just the go-go boys and the drag queens, you would see all these many different ways to be gay, because you would see the gay parents and the gay Christian groups and the lesbian dykes on bikes and, you know, the go-go boys and the drag queens and the leather guys and the married gays with kids. And straight people look at that and go, okay, there's so many ways to be gay. Is there really just one way to be straight?
Uh-huh.
Or can I be my own kind of straight? And can there be many ways to be straight? And the HIV/AIDS epidemic forced people to talk about the sex people were actually having and not the sex that we all agreed people ought to be having.
Right.
And that changed the conversation around sex.
Interesting. Well, we've got a call here. You can call 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK if you want your chance to talk to Dan Savage. He's going to be at the Wilbur Theater tonight, but he's with us at Radio Boston right now. Again, that's 800-423-8255. And let's go to Lee, who's calling from Cambridge. You're on the air, Lee.
Hi, Dan. So I'll be as quick as possible. I'm nervous. So I am a former dominatrix who has a friend who then became my pet. And our relationship evolved, and now he wants to dominate me, which I do want, but I'm scared. And I don't know why I'm scared, because when we talk about it, I do want to do it. But then when it comes time to do it, I panic.
Well, you have to trust your gut. And if there's something that doesn't feel right about it, whether it's submission in that context or submitting to him that leaves you feeling uncomfortable, you have to trust your gut and either find someone else to do it with or don't do it because maybe it's not right for you. Or, you know, it may make you feel more comfortable if you take the baby steps approach, which everyone should take when you're talking about varsity level kinks. Baby steps, baby steps, baby steps. If when you're discussing with him the scene you might want to engage in, and it's all the bells and whistles, and it's, you know, 100%, you know, at 100% of the BDSM sort of menu, that might be off putting because you don't know what his skills are as a dom. You know what he's like as a sub, but you don't know if you can trust him submitting. So baby steps. Don't go to 100 that first time. Go to 2 or 3 or 5 or 8 that first time. And maybe that'll make you feel a little bit more comfortable about doing it. But if you never get there, if you never feel comfortable about doing it, please don't do it.
Lee, does that help a bit?
Yes, that's kind of how I was feeling about it anyway, but I really want to. I don't know why. It's just when it's time to do it, I panic.
You know, there's sometimes when, you know, I'm going to contradict myself, which I'm famous for. There are sometimes when you got a bungee jump, like you're standing on that ledge with the bungee jump cord strapped to your ankles, and you regret paying the money to go bungee jumping, and you're not sure you want to do it, and sometimes you only realize you wanted to bungee jump after the bungee jump was over and you were right to take that step, even though it was very scary at that moment and your gut was telling you to back out. And then you jump and you're happy that you jumped later. But, you know, some people take that step and bungee jump and the cord breaks and they die. So individual results may vary.
Oh, I was with you until the cord breaking part.
Well, it happens. And again, it's the double standard thing. You know, people don't say we should ban bungee jumping because there have been some deaths. People say, there are risks with bungee jumping.
Yeah.
But when it comes to sex, people say, oh my God, you know, a bad thing, you could get split ends. A bad thing could happen. No one should ever do this sex thing ever. But we don't say that about anything else.
Well, Dan, let's talk about you again for a second here, because I did want to recall a moment. Back in 2009, I think, you told a story in This American Life about your mother, because you were talking about her and how she came around to supporting you when you came out to her. That's obviously such a huge moment in any individual's life. Like, can you just tell us that story again? What happened?
Well, I came out 35 or 6 years ago, 37 years ago, a long time ago. And my parents were Catholic. My father was a Catholic deacon. My mom was a Catholic lay minister. And I was an altar boy. I also went to a seminary for high school, and I was going to be a priest. For about 5 minutes, I thought about it. And then I realized I could wear dresses and live in a big house full of stained glass and Catholic kitsch without getting ordained, and opted for the latter. And when I told my mom I was gay, you know, she had problems with that. We had a couple of knockdown, drag-out fights about it because it meant I could never marry. It meant I could never have children. And that was very important to her. And I looked at her and said, and whose fault is that? Mm-hmm. Who decided that we can't get married? Who decided we can't parent? It wasn't us. It was you guys, straight people, lumping my mother in with all the evil straight people in the world, which she resented very much. But it didn't take her long to come around. And what brought her around, and I always cite this when people accuse me, as Brian Brown of the National Organization for Marriage has accused me of being anti-Catholic. And what really helped my mother, and this, I am so eternally grateful to this priest for this, is my mom called a priest who came to our house to tell him, to ask for counseling, because I had come out to her as gay. And my mom sat down on the front porch with Father Tom, whose last name I never use because I don't want to get him in trouble, with Father Tom, and said, Danny says he's gay. Not Danny is gay. Danny says he's gay.
Yeah.
And she said that to Tom, and Tom put his hand on my mother's knee and said, Judy, I'm gay. And that really helped my mother in that moment, because she had been there for Tom. He'd had a drinking problem. He'd had to go to priest rehab for drinking. There are worse things that priests get sent to rehab for, as we all are aware of now, thanks in part to the Boston Globe. And she knew that he had struggled so mightily with shame and guilt, and now knew why. And he said to my mother in that moment, it's better that he live as an openly gay person than to live the life I've lived.
Is this still a hard story for you to tell?
Or? Yeah, I get a little weepy every time I tell it. I'm so eternally grateful to Father Tom, because in that moment, he made it possible for my mother and I to keep talking. Like, everything wasn't perfect after that, but it really opened my mother's heart, and it really helped us. And it wasn't long before, you know, my mother was the matriarch and the boss of all of her younger siblings. She was the oldest. Our house was the house, the Christmas house, the Thanksgiving house. And it wasn't long before my mother let everybody know. You know, and this is, I'm talking about coming out to my family in 1979, 1980, 1981, before she let everyone know that if anyone had a problem with me, as I said in that piece for This American Life, which I wrote about her passing, that if they had a problem with me, they had a much bigger problem with her.
Yeah. So that keep talking part, is that kind of what you do with the column and the podcast?
You know, you keep talking. You talk about these
things.
But
that's like that's what you're getting people to do, to keep talking, right? To not shut down, you know, whatever scary questions they might not feel like they could ask anywhere else.
And you have to keep talking about sex because you're in constant negotiation with sex. Sex is more powerful than we are. Sex is in charge. We like to pretend that sex is something that we make decisions about, and really it's the other way around. Sex through natural selection and spontaneous mutation, it built us. It created us. We are a product of sex. Sex isn't ours, and sex is at work right now building whatever comes after us. And the idea that we dictate terms to our sexuality as opposed to the other way around is just crazy. We are constantly negotiating our surrender, the terms of our surrender. And we have to be smart about it. And we can't just do whatever it is that we feel because emotions and other people's safety and bodies have to be taken into consideration, of course. But we have to flow with it and go with it. Yeah. And fighting it just fills you with shame and conflict, and then you will burst out in an inappropriate way. It wins in the end. And you see that with, you know, famous closet cases like Ted Haggard. Sex wins in the end.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of powerful forces, we didn't even talk about politics, but quite frankly, I'm glad to take a break from it. So.
I talk a lot about politics on my show
and
in my column, and people sometimes give me grief and say, why don't you stick to sex? And I always say, when politicians stick to politics and leave sex alone, I will stick to sex and leave politicians and politics alone.
Nailed it. Well, Dan Savage, he is the Savage Love Advice columnist and host of the Savage Lovecast podcast. He will be taping a live episode of his podcast at the Wilbur Theater tonight. There's a lot of information about that at radioboston.org. Dan, thank you so much for coming in today. It was such a delight to talk with you.
Thanks for having me. And you can read my weekly column here in The Dig.
Oh, as well. That's right. Again, we're going to have links to all of that at radioboston.org. That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.